The following takes place between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Alan Butler. My co-host here is Jason Riddle. You're listening to Butler on Business. Taylor Austin is our producer. And it is Thursday, October 20th. As we enter today's show, the Dow is up 24 points to 11,526. The S&P is up almost 2 points to 1,211. The NASDAQ, however, is in the red, down 13 points to 2590.
The commodities are also off this morning, Alan. Gold's down $23 to $16.19. Silver's off 15 cents to $31 an ounce. And the NYMEX crude futures are down 0.1% to $86.
All right, so we're still going to call this current trading range 1220 down to 1020 on the S&P. I guess the big international news today is that Muammar Gaddafi may have been killed last night. So that's got the folks over there, the Muslim Brotherhood, all excited. And what caused the rally 2 days ago clearly were the rumors that the Europeans were going to print up the equivalent of $3 billion, and then that was shot down. So that led to yesterday's selling. So this on-again, off-again rally appears to be directly tied to what's going on over there in Europe as far as bailing out those banks.
Yeah, that headline from Europe is going to continue to move the markets here in the short term for sure. Yesterday, the French finance ministry actually came out and disclosed to reporters that the depth of disagreement over this ECB bailout fund, along with Germany, they've really rejected to use their balance sheet to bolster the currently $440 billion bailout fund. And there's also a lot of disagreements among policymakers over banks. And the banks, of course, are lobbying right now against being forced to recapitalize and take deeper write-downs on Greek debt. So there is a lot of unsettled business right now in Europe. And, of course, they're meeting this weekend. Investors are hoping they're going to come to some type of conclusion, but it seems like the politicians are lowering that expectation to say that there's a lot more right now to be discussed, that there's probably not going to be any type of magic bullet, magic solution coming out here in the near term.
Well, we've got a very good show lined up today. We've got four good guests because, of course, Jim Zotter, our regular commentator, is going to be coming on in the second segment. Ileana Johnson, our modern-day Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand, how are you pronouncing her name?
It's Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand. She's going to be talking to us about that UN Agenda 21. Don Watkins, I don't know, what's Don going to be
talking? Don Watkins is actually from the Ayn Rand Institute. He's going to be talking to us about the occupiers, Occupy Wall Street, that movement, the morality of it, some of the objectives of it, and as well as maybe how they can productively focus their angst.
And our good buddy Merrill Matthews over there in Dallas, Texas, is going to be calling in. We're going to talk a little bit about Obamacare with him. And today's commentary is coming from the Daily Reckoning, and what they're wondering is, who will bail out the rescuers? I think that's a good question. Tuesday's rumor circulated that the Europeans had their problems in hand, and the Dow rose, 180 points as a result. The euro went up too, and was trading at $1.37. Now, for all the talk of a disintegrating Europe, the euro has been holding together pretty well. Gold fell Tuesday, $23 an ounce, for no apparent reason. But as the day went on, the euro solution looked less and less like a solution and more like a disaster. Moody's took Spanish debt down two notches and warned that it was looking at France. Then the New York Times had the story that Moody's warned late Monday of a possible downgrade to France's flawless credit rating. French officials worry that any such move would make it hard for Paris to negotiate solutions, according to an official who was not authorized to discuss the situation publicly. The rally in American stock markets was set off by a report late Tuesday on the website of The Guardian, a British newspaper, that France and Germany had agreed to increase the size of the rescue fund, or what they're calling the European Financial Stability Facility, to as much as 2 trillion euros, which now, because of the decline in the dollar, translates into about $3 billion. But anyway, they're going to print up about $3 billion to contain the crisis and backstop Europe's banks. But almost as soon as those hopes soared, European officials quickly brought them back to earth with denials coming out of Brussels, Paris, and Berlin that not so fast.
And remember here, the theme is going to continue to be these headlines coming out of Europe about hope and optimism are really going to be moving the markets. But this latest round of rumors and the subsequent rebuttals, that's really a repeat of what we've seen time and time again over the last 2 years. I mean, these episodes have been playing out many times since the debt crisis really intensified. Most recently, the investors have been really pegging their hopes on this meeting of the politicians over there in Europe. The leaders are, you know, set to come together this Sunday in Brussels, and people anticipate that a comprehensive solution to the debt crisis might be unveiled. I think that might be a little overly optimistic from the information coming out of Angela Merkel and Sarkozy.
Now that the rating agencies are circling France, the whole rescue project is in fact in danger. It is one thing for the big strong nations, in this case France and Germany, to rescue the little ones, Greece, Ireland, Italy, but who's going to rescue France? Who's going to rescue Greece? And I guess more importantly, who's going to rescue the United States? There is no one around big enough to rescue us. So at some point, the Europeans are going to be forced to either default honestly and painfully or to bail themselves out boldly and fraudulently like we're doing here in the United States. As to the mess over here, we're on a path of self-destruction. That's today's commentary. That came courtesy of the folks at the Daily Reckoning with a little bit of ad-libbing from Jason and I.
Well, you know, the big economic number, obviously, that came out today, or yesterday, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics released their Consumer Price Index for the month of September, and they reported year-over-year CPI has grown now 3.87%. That's the highest rate of U.S. price inflation in 3 years, and even their core CPI, that growth rose for the 11th straight month up to 1.97% now in September. That's an increase of about 223% from year-over-year growth. And obviously, there are a lot of reasons right now why the government wants to underreport inflation, and Social Security is chief among those reasons. The government reports artificially low CPI numbers, and by doing this, they give, you know, the retired Americans only a 3.6% Social Security payment increase when real prices are now north of 8 or 9%. Real price inflation is north of 8 or 9%.
Well, if you go back to the Reagan-era methodology, that 3.8% that was reported yesterday, we now have a Reagan-era methodology inflation rate north of 12%, Jason.
Talking about Social Security, one of our astute listeners actually emailed me yesterday and sent a pretty alarming fact that the Social Security program since 1937 has actually taken in $3.8 trillion and only paid out $11.3 trillion. So in total, up till this point, the Social Security program has actually taken in more in taxes than it has paid out. However, you know, our corrupt politicians up there in Washington have used the Social Security money and put it into the general fund. They've spent the money. We don't have that money in savings. So, I mean, I'm not saying that the system's good. I'm not saying that the system is viable going forward, but if they would have just kept their hands off the money, the system would still have a surplus, at least at this point in time.
Okay, well, just to correct what you just said, it's not $3.8 trillion. They've taken in $13.8 trillion and paid out $11.3 trillion. You know, it's funny. Sometimes I'm thinking the right thing, but the wrong thing comes out of my mouth. Have you ever figured that one out? You think it's because we're sitting here on the radio?
I think it's natural. I think everybody does it. But you're right, $13.8 trillion they've taken in, paid out $11.3 trillion. So that's over $2 trillion in surplus they would have if our politicians didn't use that money for funding other programs and projects.
Well, as you know, they've raided the Social Security Fund, so there is no trust fund sitting out there. Plans to tackle the European zone debt crisis have stalled, with Paris and Berlin at odds over how to increase the firepower of the region's bailout fund, and that's according to French President Nicolas Sarkozy. And in Louisiana, they have a House bill, number 195, Jason, that just passed that makes, and I don't know if Governor Jindal has signed this legislation or not, but it makes it illegal for you to use cash to buy secondhand goods. So that means if you and I are doing a transaction together, if you were selling me an old TV or something, I'd have to give you a check or a money order.
You'd have to explain to me how that's any of the government's business.
You'd have to explain to me how most of this stuff is the government's business, but that just shows you the state of affairs. The standard of living for Americans has fallen longer and more steeply over the past 3 years than at any time since the U.S. government began recording that statistic 50 years ago. Now, the bottom line, the average individual now has $1,315 less in disposable income than he or she did just 3 years ago at the onset of this great recession, even though technically the recession ended in the middle of 2009. And you also have to keep in mind, Jason, that's using those bogus inflation numbers that the government's pointing out. Federal employees whose compensation averages more than $126,000 per year is now concentrated in Washington. I guess you saw where Washington, D.C. has edged out San Jose, California as the wealthiest U.S. metropolitan area in the country.
Unbelievable.
Yes, it is. The U.S. Capitol has swapped top spots with Silicon Valley, and that's according to recent Census Bureau figures, with the typical household in the Washington metro area earning $84,523. The national median income for 2010 was $50,046. The figure demonstrates how the nation's political and financial classes are prospering as the economy struggles with unemployment above 9%, and thousands of Americans now are protesting out there. Oh, that reminds me of something, Jason. Occupy Disney World. If you want to get a good chuckle, go onto Facebook and pull up Occupy Disney World, and some people are having fun with that. Now, obviously, they're not really occupying Disney World, but in the world of the people with a good sense of humor, they are. They've got Mickey Mouse in handcuffs, Goofy. There's protesters that they photoshopped in there, and people are having a lot of fun with that. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, I think this underscores the problems we face today, on Wednesday indicated Congress needs to worry about government jobs more than private sector jobs, and that is why the Senate Democrats are pushing a bill aimed at shoring up teachers and first responders. Now, this is a quote from O'Hare. It's very clear that private sector jobs have been doing just fine. It's the public sector jobs where we've lost huge numbers, and that is what this legislation is all about. Well, that is obvious, Harry. This is Alan Butler. Jason and I will be back with Jimbo on the other side of the break.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
From the heart of Atlanta, this is Biz 1190. Radio that's all business, all the time. Streaming around the clock at biz1190.com. We're always right on the money.
With the Bloomberg Small Business Report, I'm John Tucker. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner says the Small Business Lending Fund has been successful, even if it was smaller than first envisioned.
Because of these small business credit programs, the cost of credit is lower and credit terms have eased for businesses. Small banks that are in solid shape but have been unable to raise capital from the private markets have been able to take investments from the Treasury so that they can increase lending to small businesses. We provided $15.5 billion in capital in total.
The program closed September 27th, having distributed just more than $4 billion of the $30 billion to 332 community banks nationwide. In total, 933 institutions applied for the funding. Treasury has blamed the low participation on a lack of interested and qualified applicants. Says Geithner, you can't force banks to lend. And that's the Bloomberg Small Business Report. I'm John Tucker.
Motorcyclists often seem rather intimidating. Rough and tumble. Real bad mamajamas. Little do folks know, they can actually be quite sensible. Especially if they insure their motorcycle with Geico along with their car. Geico's multi-policy discount could save them quite a bit of money. Did I just say bad mamma jammers? Do you ever say something and think, I wish I'd never said that? This is one of them times.
Call Geico or visit geico.com today to see how much our multi-policy discount could save you.
They employ much of the world's workforce, contribute a great deal to the global GDP. Look out your window and you'll see a bunch of them, building, collaborating, innovating. Some call them mid-sized businesses, but there's nothing mid about them. They're engines, and we'd like to introduce them to you. IBM and the Good Company Project are proud to present some of the most inspired mid-sized companies and their business partners, helping to build a smarter planet. Get to know these engines by visiting facebook.com/midmarketIBM. Mid-sized businesses are the engines of a smarter planet.
For the latest economic, business, and market news, as it happens, listen for First Word, weekday mornings till 7, helping to jumpstart your day. As it happens, with the First Word in Business Radio. First Word. This is Biz 1190.
For decades, we have piled deficit upon deficit, mortgaging our future and our children's future for the temporary convenience of the present. To continue this long trend is to guarantee tremendous social, cultural, political, and economic upheavals.
Now you notice that song, Walking on a Thin Line. Jimbo, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, listen, starting on a lighter note, that was a good baseball game last night, but it shows the wisdom in what Ron Polk, who wrote the Baseball Bible, is talking about, that what wins games and what wins championships in baseball is in this order: pitching number one, defense number two, base running number three, and hitting is actually number four. So I think when you look at that, the Cardinals actually have the edge. When you look at the pitching, defense, base running, and hitting, Texas has the edge, obviously, in hitting. But I also think that St. Louis has a better coach in Tony La Russa. He's been around a long time, and he's proven himself in many places. So it's going to be a great series.
Yeah, the game last night was close, and I expect the entire series to be very close. Both the teams are pretty evenly matched.
Well, yeah. We were watching it, but we had a little bit of excitement around the house. I didn't get to see most of the game. Anyway, I'll tell you about it off the air.
Well, the big news was this morning, you know, obviously, and you guys have probably already touched on this, is Gaddafi reportedly shot and captured while trying to flee his hometown earlier this morning, and now Reuters is reporting that he died from his wounds. So not quite sure what's going on with that. The reports are kind of going back and forth, but it sounds like most of the reports are saying that he is dead. KT McFarland's biggest concern this morning is what happens with the new government and what's happened to the warehouses full of Gaddafi's weapons of mass destruction. Supposedly, thousands of handheld land-to-air missiles capable of bringing down commercial jetliners have gone missing, and KT's concern is that weapons could be sold to terrorists on the black market. But what happened today, this is going to give Obama a boost, as it shows that his policy is working with our European allies and NATO in succeeding in toppling the Libyan dictator Gaddafi. Some foreign policy analysts believe that this revolution of sorts may have plunged Libya into chaos economically and could have the country on a road that will have them resembling Somalia in the months and years to follow. So there are many unknowns at this point. Don't know if you covered this or not, but Joe Biden hit
the road
yesterday.
No, we didn't cover it. Yeah, we didn't cover Joe Biden.
Yeah, well, he hit the road yesterday trying to go out and sell the president's jobs bill, which has been broken up into pieces. And he's giving his Chicken Little scare tactic speeches at all the stops, saying that catastrophe would follow if the president's jobs bill, now broken up, doesn't pass, that hundreds of thousands of teachers, police, and firemen across the country would be laid off, and first responder services would be greatly affected, basically trying to scare Republicans and some Democrats that have opposed the president's new stimulus bill into passing elements of it. Now, here's what's interesting. Joe Biden now says that he didn't make reference to rape and got testy with human events when he was asked if he would like to retract his comments that the number of sexual assaults would increase if Republicans don't sign on to Barack Obama's latest jobs proposal. This was his quote to Human Events. I didn't use, no, let's get it straight, guy. Don't screw around with me. Biden lashed out at Human Events. Then Biden confirmed that he indeed did talk about rape in terms of the president's spending measure. And his quote was, murder will continue to rise. Rape will continue to rise. All crimes will continue to rise if the Democrats' agenda is not passed. Then I heard you talking about Harry Reid just before I came on, and talking about how the public sector jobs have taken the biggest hit. But here's the fact, and Reid should look over this before he opens his mouth again. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, government workers have the lowest unemployment rate of any industry or class recorded at 4.7%, while the national unemployment rate is 9.1%, nearly twice that of public sector workers.
It'd be great if it were 9.1%.
Absolutely. Now, switching gears here a little bit, Rick Perry introduced his tax plan yesterday, and it's basically the Kemp-Roth flat tax, originally introduced in 1980 in the Reagan administration. I've got a feeling Steve Forbes was instrumental in this tax policy since he endorsed Perry's campaign. This would be a tax so simple that a fourth grader who knows how to multiply could figure out anybody's income tax. The best line yesterday came from Perry himself when he said, "I want to make the tax code so simple that even Timothy Geithner can fill out his taxes on time." The tax plan would reward those who are productive to keep more of what they earn, rather than a progressive tax system that keeps moving you into higher tax brackets the more you earn. Perry also emphasized his jobs plan that would center around energy independence. Perry said, "We need to get busy bringing our oil, natural gas, and coal to the surface. Let's work towards American energy independence and energy revolution." Also look for some other Jack Kemp, Steve Forbes ideas to be introduced by the Perry campaign, including privatization of government housing and enterprise zones. Perry concluded his speech yesterday by saying that we need to get Washington out of our way. He put his fist in the air and he said, "Let's do it. Let's roll." Alan and Jason, we've talked about this before, and I want to go back to it after listening to your segment yesterday with Libertarian Chuck Donovan. I heard Chuck and you say that the Republicans are just as much to blame as the Democrats. Chuck said that unless Gary Johnson and Ron Paul are on the ticket as the Republican nominees, he will vote third-party Libertarian. So my question is, was it the Libertarians that voted down Obama's latest job stimulus bill? No, it was the Republican Party, which is made up of a coalition of moderates, conservatives, independents, Tea Party members, and yes, Libertarians, all under one tent. Why did Ron Paul and Gary Johnson join the Republican Party? Because it was closer to their beliefs than the Democrats, and it was where they needed to operate to be effective. Another question, do you think Ron Paul and Gary Johnson would have won their races running as Libertarians? I don't think so. Would they have been speaking to millions of people in these debates and prior debates about their beliefs for liberty, sound fiscal policies, and sound money? I don't think so. Ronald Reagan, the gold standard for conservatives, built a coalition of conservatives that included all these conservative groups under one roof and won two landslide elections, and then through lower taxes, less regulations, launched the greatest economic expansion in the last 50 years, seeing the creation of 24-plus million jobs in 8 short years. When the conservatives continue to split their votes 6 ways with the Republican contenders, we will end up with Mitt Romney, a moderate at best, a liberal at worst, masquerading as a conservative inside the Republican Party as the nominee. If the Republicans nominate a Rick Perry or other conservative as their candidate and Ron Paul takes his 8-10% into a third-party run at the White House, that will pull enough votes away from the Republicans to ensure Obama's reelection. In the movie Braveheart, William Wallace realized that his group or clan alone could not win against the English. He realized that he needed to unite all the clans of Scotland, and by doing this, the Scots fought and successfully won their freedom. This was the brilliance of Reagan in 1976. Reagan was a fiscal, social, and foreign policy conservative, and he knew that he had to invite all conservatives to the Republican Party. He made all conservatives feel comfortable and welcome, and he followed this continually in the Republican Party. He was a great communicator. He made everybody understand that their issues were just as important as everybody else's issues, but together they made a powerful force. The Republican Party does not owe Chuck or me or Jason or you anything. The party is merely a vehicle for those who want to participate in politics to get from point A to point B. Whoever controls the party drives this vehicle to whatever destination it chooses. It's established in every precinct in the United States, and it's primed to be taken over. I would again urge all conservatives, independents, conservative Democrats, pro-life, pro-family, pro-Second Amendment rights, pro-defense, pro-law and order, Tea Party, and Libertarians to join the Republican Party and to help change the party to go back to the way it was when Reagan had this coalition put together. Reagan did it in 1980. We can do it again if we stand together. The thing about conservatives is that we are fiercely independent, and if we're not fighting Democrats or socialists, we're fighting each other. And the thing about it is that there's not enough of us out here as conservatives to stand alone and win these elections. So the bottom line is, I just wanted to go over this again, and in my opinion, the way to go is to unite these groups together, the Libertarians, the conservatives, all these groups, bring them into the party, elect more Tea Party people, and change the party from within so that the party looks more like what we'd like it to look like.
Jim, I know you and I disagree on this particular point, and I would just like to point out that, in my opinion, the Republicans, the vast majority of Republicans, I would say 90% plus, don't really stand for an alternative to the socialists and the Democrats, like you're saying. I think that they accept the same basic premises of big government. They just want to use it to benefit the groups that they feel like should be benefited. It's not really a principled opposition, and they want to take these socialist democratic agendas and just do it for cheaper, do it for smaller, do it for lesser amounts, just really slow the progression in that one direction. And then going to your analogy with Braveheart, I thought it was a good one, but William Wallace, he stood and rallied the Klans around a central principle of freedom. And correct. What the Republicans are doing is basically, it would be like William Wallace trying to rally the Klans around, you know, the status quo, or maybe giving some Klans the privilege to run their communities off of the privilege granted by the English, maybe to a lesser extent. But it's not a fundamental rally around freedom. And that's why, I mean, Ron Paul is the only candidate, and yes, he has an R in front of his campaign. But he's much different than the other Republican candidates because he stands for the principle of freedom, which is diametrically opposed to the status quo, which is diametrically opposed to the establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats.
And what if
Jimbo, have you got time to call in at the fourth segment?
Possibly. But the bottom line is, what if Ron Paul's seat was held by a Republican establishment type? Ron Paul's ideas wouldn't be on the air. You wouldn't be hearing from Ron Paul. The bottom line is the fact that he is in the Republican Party, that Jim DeMint, Jeff Sessions, Marco Rubio are in the Republican Party is a good thing. We need more people like them. We need for them to get into the party together as a group and change the party. Again, it's a vehicle.
I agree. I completely agree. But if the Republican nominee is somebody that is not a Jim DeMint, Jeff Sessions, or Ron Paul, I'm not going to vote for the lesser of two evils. I would rather stand by in principle to support somebody that's consistent with my beliefs and hopefully encourage the Republicans to get on board with that message. I don't want to compromise. I don't want to maintain the status quo. I want something that's very different. And if they can't get on board with that, they're not going to get my vote.
Hey, Jimbo, this is good radio. Let's keep it going, but about 10:47.
Okay, I'll call you back.
All right, this is Alan Butler. Jason and I will be back with Ileana Johnson on UN21 after this break.
Biz 1190 traffic.
And there is breaking news in Northwest Atlanta. A police pursuit has apparently ended in an accident with injuries. Moore's Mill at 75. They are sending additional units. We're monitoring that right now from the Traffic Command Center. Again, the area around Moore's Mill, Howell Mill, and I-75 in Northwest Atlanta. A lot of police fire rescue activity there at the end of this police pursuit. Thankfully, the interstates and expressways have cleared from the morning commute, now heading from the suburbs into the city. No delay around the perimeter. No delay through downtown on the connector. That's a look at traffic on Biz 1190. I'm Chris Monroe. Mainly cloudy. We're up to 48 degrees now. Aaron Williams will check the full forecast right after these messages on Biz 1190.
Is your house starting to look like an edition of the TV show Hoarding? Too much stuff and no place to put it? Then call Michelle Bishop at Next Gen Contractors. Michelle can add attic space or renovate your current attic to make it an integral part of your home. For 25 years, Michelle has been renovating, repairing, or adding on attic space in Atlanta homes, and she can handle even the largest projects. So call Next Gen Contractors at 678-357-1189, 678-357-1189, or on the web at nextgencontractors.com.
This is Sandy Shumate. I'll never forget it. The day my business changed forever. I get in line at the DMV at 11:05 a.m. I take out my phone and start knocking out calls. I look at my watch, 16 minutes. More calls. I look at the office clock, 43 minutes. I ask someone with a badge, how much longer? My daughter calls. We plan her entire birthday for that weekend. 1 hour and 7 minutes. The office calls. They ask if I'm going to miss my 3 o'clock. No, I'm not. This is no way to treat customers. I race back to the office, and I call a meeting with everyone for 4:45. I tell them our policy. We will not make customers wait, ever. We'll pick up immediately, live, when they call. We'll schedule the visit ASAP, and we'll always guarantee service within 24 hours, day or night, holidays or weekends. This is Sandy Shumate. At Shumate Air Conditioning and Heating, you never wait. Remember, when it's too hot to wait, call 678-SHUMATE.
Markets are impatient, but Europe needs time. Kathleen Campion from Bloomberg World Headquarters in New York. Markets trade under the pall of Europe's long-running debt debacle, spiking on the inference of a breakthrough and stumbling on speculation of a breakdown. Markets have long memories but short attention spans. Torsten Slok is chief international economist, Deutsche Bank.
The market is very impatient, which of course is probably frustrating the European politicians that the market wants an answer very quickly. But there are 17 countries that have to sit down and come up with a solution. And unfortunately, this is not just a big bang. This is going to take time still.
Stock futures are modestly higher as companies continue to report earnings. Dow futures are up 43, S&P futures up nearly 6. The Labor Department just reported that initial jobless claims dropped last week to a level that still shows little improvement in the labor market since the start of the year. Ahead this morning, existing home sales, a report from the Philly Fed, and a look at the leading economic indicators. That's a Bloomberg Market Minute.
Biz 1190. Weather.
Looking good for the latter half of your work week. Today, we'll see plenty of sunshine. High temperatures, though, only in the upper 50s. Overnight lows around 40. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, mostly sunny. High temperatures through the 60s. I'm meteorologist Aaron Williams for Biz 1190.
You know why the Yankees always win, Frank?
Because they have Mickey Mantle?
No. It's because the other teams can't stop staring at those damn pinstripes.
Welcome back to Butler on Business. My name is Jason Riddle in the studio with Alan Butler. We're joined now on the phone by Dr. Ileana Johnson. She taught economics as a college professor for over 30 years and recently published her book about a 20-year experience in communist Romania titled Echoes of Communism.
But today she's here to talk about UN Agenda 21.
Hello, Alan. Hello, Jason.
How are you doing?
I am wonderful. Thank you.
Are you on a speakerphone?
Yes. Is that okay?
That's a kind of, yeah, I mean, it's fine. Go ahead. I mean, you can just tell you're on a speakerphone.
Is there like an echo?
Yeah, there is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ah, don't worry about it. Go ahead. We don't need to keep talking about it.
So for those listeners that weren't up to date on our previous conversations, can you just briefly explain what is UN Agenda 21?
Yes, absolutely. Agenda 21 is basically driven by the United Nations. We signed along with 178 countries in 1992 to belong to this environmental push in the name of saving the planet, but it's basically a control of our environment, our land use, water use, and private property in the name of social justice, giving up private property in the name of social justice and moving people into high-rise tenements with mixed use, using light rail, public transportation, and the like.
Well, you said you received a couple of robocalls.
Yes, I did. Friday night, I got a robocall from my supervisor who was invited me to a Smart Growth tour with some of my Smart Growth friends. And I don't have any Smart Growth friends, but they wanted me to tour this Belmont Bay, which is a mixed-use residential area with a new George Mason University environmental science facility. And I thought, well, he called the right person for the wrong reasons. Because immediately the word smart growth flagged my attention because it's one of the euphemisms used by UN Agenda 21 to hide the land use control, regulation, and confiscation under the guise of environmental protection. And who wants to destroy the environment? Who does not want to be careful with nature? So it's very deceptive.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I was very shocked and surprised that while I was not paying attention, while I was concentrating in warning the rest of the country about the danger of Agenda 21, United Nations Agenda 21, it was right in my very own backyard. And they actually had a symposium in April this year which they said they announced and polled 51% of residents, business leader, and property owners, and I am one, and I've never heard of it. And I started calling all of my friends that I know are business owners and landowners. They didn't know anything about it either. So if we didn't know, I can imagine the rest of the population did not. So it was basically driven by an NGO, a non-governmental organization, which is how Agenda 21 has infiltrated throughout the country, is through these non-governmental organizations pretending to have the acquiescence and the agreement and the vote of the general population, which is not true. It's just their ideas, their vision of how it should be, and they try to pass it, and they have been quite successful throughout the country as being the will and the vision and the votes of the locals, which is not true. And the people driving this, such as my district supervisor, are people who have certain interests in this particular development, or there are real estate developers who definitely have a vested interest in promoting this because they will get business to build all these high-rise developments and the light rails and so forth.
Ileana, does this seem to be something, this UN Agenda 21, that has been embraced by both political parties?
I think so. I think both parties have embraced this, and for reasons that I have mentioned, they have a vested interest in this, and it has already been signed by so many different groups that they don't want to go against their constituents, so to speak. So unwillingly and willingly, they have bought into this UN Agenda 21. And now many organizations, including the federal government, have sustainable development plans, smart growth plans. Everything has the word sustainable. I just found out today that George Mason University has a sustainable department, and they were sponsoring a sustainable fair today. There's actually a traveling carnival, which is sponsored by all these off-the-wall green organizations. They go across the nation talking and indoctrinating college students and high school students into being green. And I am just sick and tired of this because there's no such thing as a green industry. We have windmills and we build solar panels expensively, but wind and solar panels cannot provide enough electricity for our huge economy, and nobody has built a nuclear power plant since the 70s, and there are no green jobs. These are traditional jobs which have been given the name green, the euphemistic green name, in front of them. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's almost like a green monster coming to our community, the excuse for the United Nations to take over our economy, to take over our private property, and to set the country back a few decades to the level of third world countries in the name of social justice being one of their mantras. They have this symbol with three concentrical circles, and equity is one of them, the economy is the other, and the environment is the third one. So they're literally just brainwashing everybody into believing that it's just something wonderful. The world cannot function on windmills and solar panels, not now, anyway.
Ileana, I have the privilege of sitting on the board of a private school here in Atlanta, and I know that there is a push by not necessarily our folks, but whatever that organization is they all belong to start working in environmental studies and start entwining it into all the subjects. And we were at a board meeting, and, you know, I'm a free market entrepreneur type, and they're saying, well, that's the theme for the year. They want to work in the environmental on every subject matter. And they were asking people, well, what'd you think? And I said, well, you know, I'm a big environmental guy. I'm probably more than most people. Got a well-manicured, heavily landscaped lawn. I got 21 bird feeders. I got frogs. I've got fish. I mean, I love nature, but I can't think of anything more worthless. You know, if you want to intertwine something into everything, let's throw in the economy. But I got to thinking about UN Agenda 21, and of course, I was the only one in the room that knew anything about UN Agenda 21. But it looks to me like it's we got a top-down approach coming out of the Department of Education trying to peddle this UN 21 on a bunch of unsuspecting teachers.
Absolutely. It's absolutely true. Well, proven this fair they're doing today at George Mason. And then last week they did a four-day conference in D.C. called Railvolution, V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, which discuss, quote, strategies for building livable communities served by transit. And the conference was opened by the president of an NGO called LOCUS, L-O-C-U-S, with a speech on responsible real estate developers and investors. So they're also pushing this because they're building these high-rises, and they are presenting it as if the population wants to move away from the suburbs, and they all want to concentrate downtown in this huge high-rise, highly compacted area, which is not true. And at this conference, there was another gentleman called Manuel Pastor, professor of American Studies and Ethnicity at University of Southern California. And if you wonder what ethnicity and American studies of ethnicity have to do with transit and American communities, you're not alone, because I was shocked. But then he emphasized walkable neighborhoods, which is another thing of Agenda 21. And he says, well, the U.S. is diversifying ethnically and racially and growing older. Is that a good reason to move masses of people in high-rise tenements with high population concentration? I mean, we've been growing older for centuries, and we've done fine. I mean, because we're more racially and ethnically diverse, we must live where they want us to live. That's ridiculous. Another thing, my discovery came on the heels of Senator Robert Menendez, who introduced a Senate Bill 1621 on September 22nd of the Livable Communities Act, which is another a euphemism of Agenda 21, livable communities. It just sounds so wonderful, as if so far we haven't really lived. We just survived in our communities. And this bill has 17 Democrat co-sponsors. And when they pass it, they're actually creating an Office of Sustainable Housing and Communities at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. So more bureaucracy to control our private land and our housing by government fiat. And they were all Democrat sponsors, the 17 people. And the media made no report of this bill because they were too preoccupied with a latest diversion tactic of the administration, you know, those crazy kids in the Occupy Wall Street, the Marxist global warming lunatic collegiate fringe. They were just so enthralled with them, nobody reported on things that are really important. And this office would coordinate federal policies that foster sustainable development. That's another euphemism of Agenda 21. Healthy homes, another euphemism. And it would administer HUD sustainability initiatives. Initiatives are another euphemism used. This office would award comprehensive planning grants, community challenge grants, and encourage transit-oriented development. Well, these grants only run for a year. The communities are more than glad to take them because more of them are strapped financially. And then after a year, they go away, and they have to struggle to find funds to replace them. Anyway, all elements in this bill are further implementation of UN Agenda 21 goals by the federal government law awarding these grants to community. So they're forcing federal policy on the states, and they're exacerbating their financial needs when the grants expire. So it's not a good thing for our country. And when I wrote my article at Canada Free Press, I made a long list of things to watch for in your community that shows that Agenda 21 is in that community.
Dr. Johnson, we're going to have to leave it right there. We're just about out of time, but this is certainly one of the biggest issues that we face today is this UN Agenda 29, and if we hear
21
UN Agenda 21, if we hear these euphemisms, if we hear these buzzwords, you can almost bet that it ties back to UN Agenda 21, so we appreciate you bringing this to light, bringing this to the people and letting them know this is out there, because the first step is just becoming aware of this.
Yes, absolutely. And we really have to fight this if we're going to keep our private property and our sovereignty as a nation.
Well, Ileana, we'll have you on again to keep talking about it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. This is Alan Butler. Jason and I will be back with an encore performance out of Jimbo on the other side of the break.
Biz 1190 brings you breaking news, earnings reports, and market updates when you need it most. Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Dave Wilson.
When you need it most.
Weekday afternoons at 3 on Biz 1190. Streaming to your smartphone on biz1190.com.
Large or small, every business needs an attorney who deals with contracts. Hiring a good attorney is crucial to any successful business. Who will you turn to?
AtlantaContractLawyers.com provides professional, knowledgeable, and affordable legal advice to businesses of any size. AtlantaContractLawyers.com deals with contracts and legal actions to enforce contracts, including collection of debts and enforcement of partnership and shareholder agreements and executive employment contracts. We are local and we are providing one-hour initial consultations on contracts for a flat rate of $200 if you mention this ad. We have a highly qualified and experienced staff of business litigation attorneys with over 50 years of contract litigation experience. Because of these difficult times, it's important to find an attorney who will help you work through all the issues.
Contact AtlantaContractLawyers.com to schedule your initial consultation. Learn more about how they can help you deal with contractual disputes and negotiations even in the most challenging business environment. Call now, 404-298-0795. 404-298-0795. Online at AtlantaContractLawyers.com.
Elise, come on, it's game day. You've got all weekend to study.
Jen, this has nothing to do with studying. I've got to work. The way the economy is, I figure I'll be working for the next century just to pay off these student loans.
Well, you know...
I know. You joined the National Guard, so your college is completely paid for. Yes, you've mentioned it a couple thousand times.
The National Guard Scholarship covers up to 100% of your tuition. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Georgia National Guard. Aired by the Georgia Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey folks, Jack Berugin here, inviting you to start the trading day with me on the Jack B Show, where Pit Smarts meet Street Smarts, weekdays at 9 right here on Biz 1190. Folks, we are experiencing a once-in-a-lifetime convergence of growth and inflation on a global scale. How will this growthflation scenario affect your portfolio? Tune into the Jack B Show for the answers, plus financial news, insight, and analysis with an eye on my favorite markets, the futures. Join me for the Jack B Show, where Pit Smarts meet Street Smarts, weekday mornings at 9 on Biz 1190.
When your day is over, you want to get home as soon as possible. Heidi Rue navigates Atlanta's messy afternoon traffic right here on Biz 1190.
Heidi Rue navigates Atlanta's messy afternoon traffic.
Always right on the money.
We heard you, and that's why we've written this pledge to America. A plan to cut wasteful Washington spending and reduce the size of government.
It will not be business as usual.
You talk about cutting $100 billion from that pot.
This is specific legislation that could be taken up right now.
$100 billion.
This is a document about now.
$100 billion.
Every week.
Jimbo, that was not a setup for this segment.
No, I didn't think it was.
It was just coincidental.
All righty.
Well, all right.
In the last segment, what I was saying was that there's not enough conservatives out there to carry the day. If we don't stand together, we're going to lose big time. And one of the things that Jason said when I brought up the fact that I thought that it was a wrong approach for the libertarians to take the position that if their candidate, Ron Paul, is not the nominee of the Republican Party, they're going to take their game and go somewhere else, run third party, and stand on principle. And what Jason said was that he would rather not vote for the lesser of two evils and not compromise his position. But what I would submit to you, Jason, is that it may not be a decision about voting for the lesser of two evils. It may be to vote against the greater of the two evils. And, you know, what I would also say to you is, what if Ron Paul stayed put in the Republican Party and Gary Johnson stayed put, and they were part of a coalition to try to win this election? But let's say Donald Trump decided to run third party, and let's say that he garnered 8 to 10% of the Republican vote, and it threw Obama back into the picture, and he, you know, wound up winning the election. And because of that, he carries the Senate as well, and so the Republicans are still stuck in the same position they're in right now. Good people in the Republican Party to a degree, not enough of them. And all of a sudden, you see the Democrats just ramming the socialist agenda down your throat, my throat, and everybody else's throat. The only thing that would be standing between them and them doing that is the Republican Party.
Well, but hold on a minute. Now, yesterday, and I'm probably going to follow Jason. I'm going to follow his game out of town, too, because to me, I've taken the hook, line, and sinker one too many times. The Republicans now have their own stimulus bill. And where Obama wants to spend money we don't have, print up and spend money we don't have on teachers' unions and firefighters and studying shrimp on a treadmills and male prostitutes in Vietnam.
And gun control.
Now, all right, the Republicans have now floated their own stimulus package, but it's infrastructure spending, which was one of the components that we were supposedly seeing in the first stimulus package. So what we've got between these two political parties are competing central plan, big spending, deficit spending, money creation, stimulus programs. Well, so how is that a choice? Whose stimulus program do I like the best?
You've got to be kidding. You really have to be kidding me right now. I mean, I cannot believe we're having this conversation because...
Jimbo, I mean, how many more times am I supposed to believe that they are going to do what they say they're going to do?
If you think that it would be better to have a socialist in the White House and socialist running the Senate and the House of Representatives, then there's really nothing more for me to say.
Well, just to say, over the long term, I'm concerned about liberty in the long term. If you look at the last 100 years, we've moved in one direction towards increased welfare state, towards increased socialism, the things that you're against, under the watch of the Republicans, specifically because they do not offer a fundamental alternative. And I want to make just two quick points. One, libertarians are not conservatives, and I think it's wrong to try to bring them under the conservative umbrella. But secondly, going back to the theme of liberty in the long term, I like Chuck's example yesterday about building a cathedral. He talked about building a cathedral. It takes a lot of time. And if I'm building my cathedral, I don't want to build it with sandbags, what's convenient for the moment. I would rather take and build a strong foundation and build it, you know, with marble or something solid. And that's why I would rather stand on principle for the benefit of maybe future generations, because we need a substantial change. We don't need to keep going down the same road of the status quo that hasn't worked for the last 100 years.
And these Republicans that won this last election were sent up there to cut spending, and that's not what was delivered.
And what you're finding is that when you don't control the Senate and you don't have the White House, you can't cut spending. They sent two bills to the Senate.
All they had to do was not vote to raise the debt ceiling.
They sent Paul Ryan's bill that was going to cut $4 trillion over 10 years.
Smokescreen.
In my lifetime of 28 years, the Republicans have increased the size of our spending and debt more than the Democrats.
Now, going back to his example about building that cathedral, okay, where, you know, if they were going to build that cathedral, where'd they get the blocks? Where'd they get the cement? Where'd they get the labor? It came from the community that they were in.
Right, not big government.
You cannot build anything if you don't have a structure that you can draw against. The structure we have right now is a vehicle called the Republican Party that has more conservatives, more libertarians, more independents, more Tea Party people than the other party. The other party doesn't have any of those elements in it.
Well, I would agree with you there.
So if you want to build that cathedral, you better build it inside the Republican Party, and we're running out of time. You guys are on the show every day talking about how critical things are getting.
We are out of time, and Taylor's yelling at us to get off, so we got to hop out. But we'll be back on the other side of the hour with more Butler on Business.
Go away from my window. Leave at your own chosen speed.